Oh, yes. I saw you swiveling those hips. All right, they're still working. That's good. Ramsey Lewis and the Ramsey Lewis Trio with Wade in the Water. Today is Free Your Mind Friday, when everybody has a chance to wade in the water with their opinions. And please let it be an opinion. Make a statement about something and then defend it, one way or the other. It doesn't matter whether people agree or they disagree. It matters only, really, that you make your case about whatever it is that you have identified as a subject worthy of special focus today on Free Your Mind Friday. The number to call is 874-4888. See, I got to go get my memory and my brain in general checked. 888-874-4888. The purpose of Free Your Mind Friday is that we dispense with our regular program format and we establish in this hour a forum, an open forum, where whatever it is that you have especially in mind to bring to our attention, you do that, but with the idea that you're taking a position as well, and you want to give us an indication that you've done some work, you have some background to offer on the subject that you're talking about, and you are advising us what your position is. And then people are free to react one way or the other. Whether they agree or disagree is not the point here. What is the point is that you use your time very judiciously and strategically to tackle an issue in the news, or maybe it's not even in the news yet, but it is worth considering, and you're bringing it to us, to our attention. So that's really what it is. Free Your Mind Friday at 888-874-4888. And we'll get started as soon as I see some names up on the board. Let me see. Are there names on the board? I haven't seen. Oh, yes, I see. Okay, I take it back. 888-874-4888. First up is Henry from Chicago. Hello, Henry. How you doing?
All right, you, Trace. How's it going by you?
Deluge here. We're having a lot of rain today. Oh, but I love the rain. I'm one of those weird people. I love rain. It quiets everything down.
I'm willing to bet you it's not 30 degrees like it is up here in Chicago.
No, it's not quite 30 here. It's a little warmer than that, but the rain is the main thing. It just calms everything down. It's a blessing in disguise. So what's on your mind that you're freeing it of today?
Well, first I want to wish you, the lead stories and PRN audience, a safe and productive weekend.
Thank you.
I wanted to touch on the subject you briefly touched about yesterday in regards to this whole thing about the exoneration of Malcolm X's killers, or supposedly, you know, shooters. I thought that was real interesting, you know, about the time it came out and how this government, who we mostly lay the blame on for the assassination of Malcolm X, to come out and exonerate these guys. And what's so funny is, you know, I remember reading a book by Carl Evans some years ago called The Judas Factor. And generally, he basically said the same thing that has came out, these last couple of years. And I guess people have been crediting this, you know, this documentary that came out on Netflix. I remember watching like two episodes and I just kind of put it down because I'm like they didn't like give me anything new. So I was just wondering, like, when Carl Evans wrote that book, The Judas Factor, that was back in 1993. And I remember that not getting a lot of fanfare amongst folks. And even, you know, a lot of people in, you know, a lot of my friends in the Nation of Islam didn't like Carl Evans because of the fact that, you know, he wrote a book about Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam. But, you know, what was surprising about it is like, with Carl Evans' book, you know, he removed a lot of blame on the nation, and basically, you know, kind of through documents and stuff, kind of uncovered a plot that the government has been plotting for a couple of years in regards to, you know, assassinating Malcolm X. So I just don't get why it all of a sudden garnered such attention, and what prompted, you know, the U.S. government to have this, you know, self-righteous act when they're the most complicit in it, to exonerate the supposedly killers of Malcolm X. And I think either one or two of them are already deceased, if I'm correct.
Yes.
Okay. So was it one or two?
One.
Okay. Yeah, just one. And so, so, I mean, basically, I don't get, what's the timing? Why is this all of a sudden happening?
Well, speaking of timing, I was curious as to why it took 56 years to come to some conclusion about that.
Mm-hmm.
More than half a century, and this is the country with the greatest investigative capability and all of that stuff. 56 years to find out or to even get close to the idea that somebody killed Malcolm X. And who was it? And why did they kill him? I was hoping that after 56 years, we will know. But we still don't know, really. And I tend to agree with you on the question of the government is acting like it has no role in this at all. And
I mean,
you're talking to people with brains, okay? We could think. This did not happen because a group of people by themselves came up with a plot. And the government knows nothing of it. But the key here to me is 56 years, more than half a century, and the government that has a world-renowned FBI, CIA, and all manner of bureaus of investigation and whatnot. Still, it took so long for them, and they still haven't identified anything. They haven't answered it. They haven't answered this question after 56 years.
Yeah, and Eutrice, I wanted to ask you this because I wasn't alive when Malcolm was assassinated, but, you know, from what people have told me, you know, it really divided the black community when you're talking about when Malcolm was killed. You know, there were some folks who were just kind of like, well, you know, he kind of deserved it. And then there were some who were just truly sad about the whole situation.
Yeah.
I mean, what was your take on it? And, you know, how did it go, like, you know, where you were at?
Well, it's very traumatic. Very traumatic. I don't think I've gotten over this at all. And I harbor an anger about it. because I believe this was a plan hatched at home.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the idea was to put a check on the rising tide of African American political activity and sentiment, and don't underestimate this, movement away from standard, from the standard institutions, into a more radicalized scope of activity. We still don't know. I have no doubt that members of the nation cooperated, as we see, and, you know, those who have been charged. But there's a larger picture here. And I believe Malcolm X was onto something about universalizing the black struggle. That was, to me, the impetus for cutting his life short. He had gained tremendous respect. He was considered a man of great integrity. And worldwide, he garnered more respect than the actual presidents of the United States, even after his death. So there are sides to this. I wish that, you know, could be put in a book that authenticates a lot of these theories, because I think they're all valid. I think they're all valid. But I happen to hone in particularly on Malcolm X's universal appeal and what I call the universalization, if I could use that word, of the black struggle. Because so many things branched off of it all over the world. And not necessarily by just black people. But he was a light to all movements looking for equity and fairness and equality in their various societies. I think that was a major threat to the organized systems. Thanks for calling in, Henry, and getting us started today. Bob from Virginia, you're on the air.
Hi, it's Reese. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Thank you for your mind Friday. And I have to agree with the gentleman that just spoke, but maybe the bigger problem is that you don't recognize from the beginning that the way politics is controlled in this country is by assassinations. Like when you consider more money, time, and effort, and people have been involved in the January 6th Capitol issue than with Malcolm X, more pages and more ink has been spilt, you realize there's an imbalance. But I want to bring up something else that's very important and is being underreported also.
Yes, but wait a minute before you move on.
Yeah.
Why did you think it was necessary to bring up the January 6th issue when we were talking about Malcolm X? What was the purpose of that?
Malcolm X should have received more press and more discussion and more.
Should have and could have and would have no longer matters. We know what the end result was. I'm asking you, because you inserted very deftly, at least that was the plan, to bring attention to the January 6th march on Washington, a conservative march.
I intended for those two issues to segue into the next thing I want to discuss. And that is what's being
reported. Yes, but that's the next thing you want. I want to discuss, again, I'm going to go back to my question. Why did you feel it necessary to hook the two up together? What was the point there?
Time and effort and money spent on reporting issues.
It doesn't fly.
Well, I'm sorry, it doesn't fly. I mean, that's what's in my mind. Maybe not in your mind, that's what's in my mind.
No, but you this is not the first time you've called and tried to weave the thread in to other things that we are discussing. I wonder why you felt it necessary to link the assassination of Malcolm X with the struggle as you see it in Washington, D.C.
Because that's what you asked. That's what you asked us in the beginning of the show to provide our opinions and have backup for what we're going to say. Now, if I can get on to what I'm going to say, maybe you'll understand.
Ooh. So now you're rude on top of everything else.
I'm not rude. I'm making a statement. You asked us to do this, and I'm trying to do it.
Don't play games with me. I am a games master when it comes to words. I understand it very well.
You're a game master.
So, but I don't need your reassurance. I asked you a question which you still have not answered.
I gave you an answer. That's the best answer I have. If you don't,
it's the best answer for you. So then proceed. It's the best that you can do. All right. We'll keep that in mind.
Okay. So the issue is underreported things that are underreported that are really happening. So I don't know if it has occurred to you or any of the other listeners that coins are being removed from the system, the society. For about 9 months now, all the grocery stores, I just visited New York recently, all the grocery stores, I'm told, have signs up that say, there's a shortage of coins. Please bring in your coins to make your purchases, especially if your purchases are not in even dollar amounts. All the stores, every single major grocery store. Okay, I noticed that. It was interesting. So then I went to the bank, and in the bank, now I'm told, for the past 2 weeks, they have a similar sign. There's a coin shortage. We can't get coins. Please bring in your coins when you make deposits to round up the amount to even amounts, or when you make withdrawals to round up the amounts to even amounts, so we don't have to increase the problem of coin shortages. Which now makes me think, and people I've talked to think, that the government is removing coins from circulation. I don't know why. Anybody can guess. Maybe you want to discuss that. But we all think that there's a major, major something going on having to do with this government controls the currency, of course, in this country. Major problem with the government removing coins from circulation. It's a question. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well, I certainly don't know, but I'm glad that you brought it to our attention. Maybe it's something that we keep an eye on.
Great. Have a wonderful weekend, and thank you for letting me participate in today's call.
All right. Thank you. G from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Oh, hello, Utrecht. How you doing? How's everyone doing?
Okay.
Hope everyone is doing good. Good.
You're very low.
Oh.
You need to be a little louder on the phone.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, yes. I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. Let me... all right. One thing... on the Malcolm X reporting is that I listened to Amy Goodman's part of the program, and she had the gentleman on who, did the Netflix. I recognized him as part of the team on the book that Manning Marable did some years ago. Okay. One thing I noticed on Amy Goodman's program is that she didn't mention, and neither did he, that there were other books prior to his statement, his Netflix program, showing that the fifth person or the names of the people who were cited as killers, they didn't mention that book. Amy didn't mention those books. So it was like it's kind of underreported, and it gave more weight to what the Netflix did and more weight to what recently came out than I believe should have been given. And I guess the effect...
Have you contacted her program to express these thoughts of yours?
No, maybe I should, but I haven't.
Well, I thought so. I think so.
Okay.
Because complaining to me about Amy Goodman doesn't do anything for either of us.
Okay.
You or me.
Okay.
But go to the significance that you're getting at, I hope. What is the significance of what you're pointing out?
Well, if they don't report on the full spectrum of the people who contributed heavily, like Zach Kondo and Carl Evans, and if I'm missing anyone else, then it puts more emphasis on them, you know, on the newer people, like this gentleman who was part of the Netflix program, and even part of Manning Marable. And I'm not saying they don't deserve any weight, but it puts probably more weight than should be. And then you could, those people, and I guess including Amy Goodman, who are doing a good job, but they can direct the story in a different direction than what it could go. And Malcolm X was so important, so significant in terms of, like you said, his international scope, his national scope, and he was reaching a lot of people, and he had changed some of his patterns, not all. But he was such a person covering so much strata, I guess is a word I could use, so much. He was so broad and so intelligent and so thought-provoking that people who may want to still shut that down or discourage people from being broad, discourage people from looking at him in an independent perspective, perhaps they could succeed if they could dissuade people from researching and finding out these other books that describe it more fully. And, you know, the credit, more credit would be given to Netflix, more credit would be given to the DA. And again, the DA has, Manhattan DA has a importance in exonerating these men, but as far as the murder, they weren't there.
After 56 years.
And they suppressed a lot of things.
Okay.
I said there's a lot of people that do
research. There are some things we have to admit. We will never know the absolute truth about most things like this. We'll never know.
Yeah.
We are not in the circles of very great or high powers. We're not in those circles.
Right.
We can, you know, theorize. We can talk to people we think would know and whatnot, but we will never know. And that's another thing that bothers me. Everybody positions themselves as if they're telling the truth. There are many, many truths that will probably never be told because they don't know and they're not researching them. So we have to be content with information that comes when it comes. And then we try to make sense of it. We will never know.
And also I want to add to what you're saying, if you don't mind. you know, with all the manipulation that went on during that time to suppress evidence, to say, because those two gentlemen, they said they had alibis and they were able to present corroborative statements to back up their alibis, but all that was suppressed. You know, I remember reading some of the, you know, documents, at least partly, and, you know, people that knew or that were involved weren't even asked questions. I mean, there's a whole lot of stuff. So on top of the fact that we weren't there for all of, you know, that went on, as you're saying, and I believe I'm stating it in connection with how you're stating it, there's so much that, you know, was suppressed so that we wouldn't know, so that we wouldn't know more of the truth, so that we wouldn't, you know, I guess, want to follow him or say to ourselves, hey, okay, what could I do, you know, that would back up or support what he's doing? Or, you know, let me find out more about what he's actually doing, you know, and let me see who else is doing similar to what he's doing and see if I could be with them, or just do differently. And it seems like ultimately one of the things that isn't desired is for the public to do differently from what we're led to do. And you might not, maybe I'm not saying that well.
You know? I understand you. The thing that we have to accept, I mean, not willingly perhaps, but these are the truths that we have to deal with. We will never know all there is to know. We'll never know. And we can rely on sources that are available to us, but they don't know everything. They perhaps know more than the average person because they've had to go do research and talk to people and so forth. So we look to them as a genuine resource. But they are not the be-all and end-all. We always have to keep that in mind. They probably did a lot of work in putting perspective on a situation, but they don't know all there is to know. And I find it very disconcerting that many people who call themselves journalists position themselves as kind of media stars. Well, you're doing your work. That's all it is. You're doing your work, and this is as far as you've gotten. Thank you, and we appreciate it. And now let me get to read what it is you just were able to scrape out. But the story continues. It is not finished. And depending on the sources that are spoken to or solicited for information, you also have to be careful about what side are they on. There's a lot of money. A lot of money is wrapped up in these kinds of investigations. People want money for what they know. And they're reporting things that seem to have no competition at all. And well, just taking it in wholesale without keeping in mind that all that they're reading may not necessarily be true or accurate. But, you know, it's the hot thing. So they're in on the hot thing. They get to be booked on shows. They get to do their own programs. And they get to lift themselves up above everybody else as authorities on subjects. But they really are not.
Yeah. Got that right.
So you have to be a defensive consumer of information. Like I said, who so far has explained why it has taken 56 years to even get to this point, when we have supposedly one of the sharpest, the keenest investigation industries in the world? That doesn't square, does it?
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't square. So we are, in a sense, we have to be defensive consumers of information. Even as we read or watch or listen to things, we still have to be defensive. Because if anybody could answer that question for me, that would be great. I'll be satisfied with that. Explain why it took 56 years to conclude who was involved and to what degree in the death of Malcolm X, in the assassination of Malcolm X. We don't know,
right?
So you got to take everything with a big, you know, a big bite of doubt. And you, over time, you ruminate and you say, well, this doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense. And you keep it in mind because there are a lot of games being played and they're not just the government playing these games.
And what are the political ends of the people who are, you know, giving you an answer so late? I think you mentioned that.
Exactly. We keep exempting them from blame and suspicion. But this is a particular world. This business of, you know, the cloak and dagger world. You really have to have some reason to trust everything a person says because, well, they know and I believe them. No, you're still flying blind. And they're taking advantage of it. A lot of them, I've read a lot of books that are useful if you are home on a cold night and you have no heat. Throw them in a fireplace. I read a lot of books like that. And I could tell, you know, when it comes to you, it will come to you in many cases, this does not make sense. I'm not reading any more of this. This is garbage. And you move on. And you say to yourself, maybe this isn't the book. Maybe another book down the road will yield more information, useful information. But everybody's playing a game. And you find that a lot. Malcolm X has become a launching pad for many people who otherwise would not be given the time of day. They just want to know how to use the name and the image and a little bit of good and correct history, and you weave it in with the other stuff that they want to accomplish. They want to be national figures. They want to be interviewed by the national media. So they write things that they know the media would go for. It doesn't mean that it is correct or is even worthy of reading. But we have to keep our heads on. So in this latest furor over, oh my God, look what has happened. You know, you have the exoneration of Malcolm X's killers and all this kind. When people were telling them the truth, nobody was listening.
Yeah.
Because the government didn't sanction it.
Right.
The government is a sanction it. And they're not
so
here to go against the government.
Yeah. Apparently they weren't there, that those two. But by presenting,
well, you don't have to be,
who did they cover up?
We don't know a lot of things about major things that happened because we weren't there.
Right.
But that's what makes you an excellent journalist. You research. And you go to places and to sources that you trust or are trustworthy, let's say that. you have to do a lot of work.
Yeah.
But people, many people in this business called journalism want a fast route to public acclamation and notoriety. And so a lot of things get lost in the sauce.
Yes.
So you have to be a defensive reader. You have to be a defensive reader. And the more controversial the subject, the more you have to be defensive as you read or you watch something and take it in. Don't do that until you feel comfortable. Don't just automatically incorporate it into your reservoir of information. It might taint the good stuff that you have there. You may have good stuff, and you add that stuff to your good stuff, and everything becomes tainted. Thanks for calling in today. Thank you, G.
Thank
you. Good to hear from you. Gwen from Manhattan, you're on the air. Hello, Gwen.
Justice got lost in the sauce. I'm just calling to tell everybody that Kyle Rittenhouse got off all charges completely, 100% not guilty. The judge said to the jury, or he inferred that the jury had made the correct decision in his opinion. I have all these nice white people are on TV talking about how you can't spike a football. I mean, to me, today is a day that 2 + 2 = 5. So now that's how I see it.
Wait a minute. You're disappointing me here. We saw that coming.
I knew. Listen, we all said we knew it was going to happen. But honestly,
okay.
It was so clear. How can you watch a video of what we saw and say that this guy's not guilty? Who goes into a crowd with an AR-15 and starts, I'll tell you what. The next time we see a school shooting, I guess if the principal comes in and tries to take away the gun, then the shooter of your children can get off for self-defense. Because, it sets a whole new bar. Going into crowds with AR-15.
This has been going on for a long time.
It has been going on, but we've never seen
people.
This has been going on for a long time. I've never seen anybody go in with an assault weapon like that. And it's on film. So the whole thing's on film.
Have you ever seen somebody get the privilege of choosing their own jurors?
Not in my life. I've never seen anything this in my life. And you know, the funny thing is they keep saying how they have to have all this protection around them. Well, why would you need any protection if what you did was justified and you truly are innocent? I mean, what I'm saying now is I think that people on the left absolutely have to start going to all rallies fully armed. You cannot go not armed anymore, because this is going to start something new. I really believe that people will not. I've never felt safe in a lot of places I went to when it came to protesting, but most of the time, the only violence was that people would knock down a barrier. Or, you know, there would be some pushing. And the cops would come along and assault us. But I've never, ever, I would be terrified if I saw somebody walking down the street in New York with an AR-15, protest or no protest. I would be terrified. And I would definitely think that person with that gun is here to shoot somebody, because it's not normal. I mean, nobody else in that protest was carrying around an AR-15. Just this young boy carrying around the AR-15. And it was even stranger to me that I saw the cop next to him, and they were running side by side. And I thought that this kid looked like many people might have thought he was an undercover cop, because they were carrying, if you just, to the naked eye, they looked like they were the same weapon. So one was a 14 and one was a 15. But you don't usually see civilians running around in the street with that kind of weaponry. And I, like everybody else, would assume if somebody came into the place where I worked or a school or to a demonstration and they were carrying that, I would feel threatened instantly, because it's not normal. but it will be the new norm, because I think that one of the things the left has to do is start to harden up and realize that, you know, this could be the start of the new civil war, which a lot of people have been pushing for a long time. They want that civil war. And I'll tell you something, the next verdict is going to come down. And I don't see, I've been watching the trial. I cannot see any way that these guys could get out of the murder of Arbery. I can't see it. I can't see it from the film. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make any sense in the statements, but I think we're at even a new low, an even lower low, because it means that all this crap they've been feeding about racial equality and, you know, being more tolerant, all this crap of saying that we've grown since the 1960s. No, we have not. We just took about 50 steps back. We are not anywhere. We are exactly where we were, and it's even worse now, because it's A-OK to walk around in the street with an AR-15, and nobody's going to bother you, and Papa Judge is going to stand up there and tell you what a good boy you were, and we're so glad we didn't do anything to destroy your life. What about the two families that are sitting there with their sons, both dead? One of the guys got a shot in the head. I mean, all of these people are shattered, and nobody's interviewing them. Nobody gives a rat's butt about what happened to them or their pain.
And this is at a time when this guy was a teenager.
Teenager.
He had the power of life and death at that level as a teenager.
Right. And everybody's saying, good boy. His mama sent him on his way. You know, she knew. She bought him the gun. She sent him on his way to travel 25 miles to a different state to participate in this. Are you telling me they didn't know where they were going or what they were doing? Are you telling me that she didn't think that it could get violent? I mean, you armed him up there. I mean, it's all the adults are as guilty as this kid is. But if there is no reaction to this, I'll be even more stunned than I am now. But all the TV is chirping along like it's perfectly normal. I feel like nothing in this world is normal anymore, you know? From injecting crap in your arms that's poison, and to things like this, there's no common sense.
But let us look at the role of media here.
Oh my God, they're helping it along beautifully. You know what they're doing? They're buffering it. They're buffering it, so there's no reaction. All I've heard is women in flowery dresses talking about that the system really works. I hear a judge on here saying, well, you know, when everybody thought Kyle was faking his tears the other day, well, because Kyle, when he found out he was not guilty, he almost passed out. He was so excited. He was crying. He was hyperventilating. I don't blame him, because it's so obvious that he was guilty. I don't blame him for being all excited. But you hear these people now talking about his reaction. I haven't heard one person on TV talking about the other family, the victims, the dead people that lost their kids and their families and their grief. Just this little piece of crap and his maniacal mother who suits them up with a gun to go out and do, I mean, what kind of parent is that, by the way? I just can't believe it. And the judge.
Let me ask you the question. Is it any different from the attitude that we have been hearing in the Arbery case, I should say? Where they have a perfectly rational reason for killing this young man.
Right.
Who had no weapons, who was just jogging.
I mean, you suit up in your car, you go out your car with a rifle and a magnum, and you're not going to do anything. And the guy is running in his shorts on a like 95 degree day in Georgia. You can see that he has nothing on him, and we're actually going to try to say that he assaulted them. You got a gun in his face. I mean, what was he supposed to do? I don't get. Yeah, and you know what the funniest thing is, that for years, you know, all the TV shows and the movies, they always show scenes like this where somebody tries to accost you with a weapon, but the hero comes in, gets the weapon, takes it away, and saves the day. Well, today, the hero would be the villain, and he would be going to jail and would be seen as not saving the day. It is unbelievable to me. I really, honestly, I heard all week, I just thought it was negative Nancy saying that, you know, that this kid was going to get off. But I thought, truly, he'd get something. And he is off scot-free, and guess what else he's going to do? He's going to go ahead and pursue his career as a police officer. How appropriate. Sunny.
But,
yes, yeah, Sunny.
I don't want to tout our program as the be-all and end-all, but we saw it, and we pointed it out. This is what's going to happen.
Yep.
And people will probably say, come on, that's an exaggeration. But I have never in my professional life seen a judge basically consign the defendant to choosing a jury.
I couldn't believe it. I'm stunned. And then they gave that judge a half hour to talk about it. And then he also got to admonish people in America who were sending him nasty emails, letting him know that they thought that was horrific. So he gets half hour of airtime to talk about how frightened he was of the reaction of people and that this is perfectly normal in his courts. He does it all the time. I mean, this guy's a maniac, too. He ought to be bounced right out on his bald head. Anyway, I'm stunned today.
We also
so emotional.
The media did not do its job. The media basically seemed to forget, the rules of reporting. This is extraordinary. They would have had a whole string of experts talking about it and lots of, people observing this and saying, no, this is not right. Experts.
And by the way, they just showed two pictures of the victims on TV. And the pictures they chose are pictures that make them look like thugs and hooligans. Not this little baby face like Kyle. It's like the media is just sitting here working this thing to make sure that there's not too much of a violent reaction, that America we're so stupid, we accept anything. We even think that it was normal for a building to fall down at 3 o'clock in the afternoon when nothing hit it here in New York City. That was normal, acceptable, no problem. Okay? So you know what? People look in the mirror. Everybody's crazy. I'm sorry. Wow. Things like this are not—they're not normal and they're not logical.
Found
you have
not
a good weekend.
Guilty on all charges, all charges,
all charges. Not guilty. Everything. Not one thing was he found guilty on. Nothing. And they just the way the judge practically coddled him at the end, like he was a son. Like you did the right thing, son. Don't worry. And I knew it all would all turn out. And one thing we're also not seeing is we're not seeing any reaction of the relatives of the people who were killed. We're not seeing their tears. We're not seeing anything. It's completely one-sided. And the one little bit you have seen of the two victims that were killed are shots that make them look like they're criminals. I mean, it's unbelievable. it's painted by the media. I mean, even this guy on this court TV yesterday, his mother, she looks like a saint herself. She's sitting in the audience, weeping quietly, looking like Mother Teresa. I mean, this is a woman who went out and bought her kid an AR-15.
And he was barely
15
at the time, too. He was barely 15 at the time.
Yeah. I mean,
thanks
really.
And
what is wrong with this country?
Try and calm down.
I will. I'm going to take a long walk.
drink some tea. And just chill out for a minute, because
I don't want to watch the next one.
You know,
the next one I'm going to watch is the Armory.
Over the top. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Thanks a lot for your call today, Gwen. Thank you.
Thank you, Therese. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, you're welcome. Ed from Queens, you're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing, Therese?
Okay, Ed, how are you?
Gwen took the words right out of my mouth. I mean, I couldn't believe it. When I saw it, I was at lunch on my lunch break, and I was just perusing with my phone. And America, unfortunately, does not surprise me. This was an atrocity. This was a total atrocity. And now I'm more concerned about the Ahmaud Arbery case. This kid and his mother and his whole family allowed him to cross state lines with a military weapon designed to kill people. AR-15 is not designed to hunt. It's designed to kill people into a situation where he was not deputized, where he had no business being, where he had no legal, moral, ethical support for him being there to protect property, no training, or just on a base level. And he gets away with it. Two people are dead, one man.
Let me just ask you a question. Did we not predict this?
Yes.
Okay. Did we not say this is what is going to happen?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we did.
So if, as just say, ordinary people, we don't have the legal experience and expertise and so forth, and we could see it happening, mm-hmm. but they can't?
Of course they could. That's why I said America does not surprise me. America, unfortunately, America does not surprise me. I mean, if you're going to allow this, you're setting a precedent. Along with the Zimmermans, along with this, you're setting a precedent. And you know, streets can run red with blood from both sides. Because you just set a precedent. You just gave legal cause to an unjustifiable claim for self-defense. You can't create a situation now, legally, you can't create a situation now where someone's life is in danger and you are the protagonist in that situation and you can claim self-defense. Basically, he was saying, I shot them because they was going to take my gun from me and hurt me with my gun, so I shot them. But I brought the gun to the place. It's a sad day, but there are a lot of them in this country's history, and unfortunately, it looks like there's going to be a lot more in this country's future.
Will there be an appropriate reaction, you think, to this craziness that's going on?
Well,
we have in the Aubrey case, we have the defendant claiming he was threatened. He had the gun. He was the one who shot Albert to death.
That is the same thing in this case.
In this case, you had
the gun. Yes, you created the circumstances. You created the danger. You were the protagonist. You had the gun. And now you're claiming self-defense because you're a very weak individual if you have a gun and you allow somebody to take it from you and shoot you. But that's a plausible self-defense platform or that's a plausible defense in the court of law. I don't know how this.
So what should happen now? What do you think should happen now? We have two examples, kind of back to back, of the most appropriate outcomes here. What should happen?
Well, one of your callers, Marcus, called in when I made a suggestion before everybody wants to talk outside of this and that. The bottom line is we need to have some type of national standard on these type of laws as far as stand your ground, citizens arrest, self-defense. We need to have some type of national standard brought to bear to where there is some type of demarcation to where you can't claim quote unquote life or death rights. We need to have something, some type of national law, some type of national standard that separates. We did it with housing. We did it with voting rights. We need to have some type of, because these laws are onto their own selves in these different states. And that gives these people this leeway to grab a gun and kill somebody. Based on their, what I believe is their racial bias.
I think you're right. I agree with your position.
I mean, it's the only logical
and, but
way
we to... said it. This is the thing that bugs me. We saw it. We saw it in the making. We said it.
You said it. I said it. I'm a caller said it. I mean, I hate to be right, but. And I don't know what's going to happen with I said it before with the Aubrey case. This defense makes no sense. But all they need is reasonable doubt. We shall see.
I can't. What do you think? Because at the time with the other case, Rittenhouse, wasn't he I mean, what would it have taken for people to get away from the fact that this was an underage kid, no matter what he looked like to you? But he was an underage kid.
I don't care what he looked like. Whether underage or overage, well, first of all, I blame his mother personally because his mother drove him there, drove him from one state to another state with a military weapon that is only designed to kill people. You don't hunt with an AR-15. I was in the Army. AR-15 is a cousin to the M-16. Those weapons are designed to kill the enemy. They're designed to kill. They're weapons of murder. They're not for hunting. They're not for any type of sport. They're designed to kill. They shoot a round that makes a hole that kills you. That's it. And number one. Number two, underage, overage, I mean, you know, 17, 18, his mentality was that of, to my mind, his mentality was that of a racist. He came out there with a weapon. And as far as him being underage, he had no business being in that environment in the first place. He had no training. He had no connection with law enforcement whatsoever. And he's just going out there, oh, I'm going to defend property based on the call of the militia. And you just gave them a green light now. You just gave them a green light in Wisconsin to do whatever the heck they want to do.
Well, we have to leave it there. We're out of time. But I understand because I kept saying, I'm not seeing this. This is not right. Why is it that there isn't a groundswell of opposition here? We're not hearing from the American people about this. So they must be okay with it. Just at your next local demonstration, just get their packing, but with military-style weapons and prepared to kill. That's a new American way. Thanks a lot, Ed, for calling in today. Thank you all for calling in and expressing and freeing your mind. Let me put it that way. You did a great job, and I want you to relax over the weekend. Take it easy. Take it easy. And return to your family and friends and reestablish or strengthen the bonds that you have with them. And we'll see each other on Monday back in fighting mode. Bye-bye.